Hello, you're listening to Enemies of Good Art on Resonance 104.4 FM. This is our final show in the series. And we thought we'd come together as the original founders of Enemies of Good Art to talk about how we think our movement is progressing and if it's progressing at all, what work is yet to be done, and how do we change the climate for women in particular, artists, after they've had children. I'm joined by Kat Phillips, who's a London-based artist and art activist. She's one half of the collaboration Can Art Phillips. Anna Shorter will be joining us from Berlin at 7 o'clock. She's a broadcast journalist and she's expecting her second baby in May. Jemima Brown is an artist based in London and a recent recipient of the Mark Tanner Sculpture Award. And Esther Windsor is curator and academic, currently completing a PhD in fine art at Kingston University. And I thought about tonight's show. I thought about how we might start it. And it actually came from a conversation I had with Jemima about a week ago where I asked her how she was.
And I had a massive rant about how difficult I was finding life at the moment. I think there's one of the many myths is that things get easier as they get a bit older.
The children.
That is. I remember someone saying to me when my little boy was tiny, oh, it'll get easier once he goes to school. It doesn't necessarily. We're still, I think, juggling things, and I feel very stretched in lots and lots of different directions. And I think that's where I'm finding things difficult at the moment in terms of practicing as an artist and having a small child. So that was the basis of my rant to you the other day, I think.
But practically speaking, and your beef was the amount of studio time that you're trying to achieve.
I think the thing that I'm finding is that my time in the studio is the thing that always drops to the bottom of the list, because there's always the need to be earning money, looking after children. There's just too many things on the list. And if the studio time gets crunched into just a tiny, tiny amount, it's very difficult to keep any kind of momentum. So that was what I was finding hard.
I was emailed recently by a Welsh artist that I know. She moved to London a couple of years ago and she sent me an email to say that she'd had a baby now. But also she had received the following email that I'm going to read out from a curator when she questioned the particular survey show and the underrepresentation of women within the show. And her reply from said curator, and I'm not going to give the game away entirely because apparently I shouldn't, but anyway... As one of the curators, I thought I'd drop you a line to let you know that our priority was to show great art, not art by women. Sadly, there wasn't any black people in the show either. Although I'm in a wheelchair, as the curator, and in your eyes, that must count for some sort of equality. ! I suggest you curate a show yourself, as it seems you have a very different agenda to the agenda set out for this particular show. And I was quite disheartened, and she was quite disheartened, and we were also quite a few other women that I've spoken to have been quite fed up about such a response, to think that it's even possible. And it's the starting point for a discussion we're going to have at the Women of the World Festival on the 9th of March, coming up at the South Bank Centre. But Esther, you were talking earlier about the discussion, our discussion, and feeling how perhaps you should fit into this discussion tonight. And my response to you was... that you're a mother with a child, obviously, but an artist and also an academic. And your opinion and your response, and also you're a curator, is very valid. And you've also hosted a number of shows for us, and you've been very active in terms of our discussions, in terms of where Enemies of Good Art will go and what it means for other practicing artists. And you've said the public discussion is quite an important one. But when we read this email and we read this sort of junk, this crap that's still being perpetuated by people who should frankly know better, or somehow aren't willing to receive some sort of criticism or be pulled up for their inaction, then... How do you feel about it?
As a curator, as a
woman, as a curator, as a mother, an artist. I have put you on the spot here a wee bit. Sorry.
Yes. It's this is so a response to the anonymous curator of this email. I suppose just to backtrack a little bit, you know, one of the things that has been really important to me about being involved with Enemies of Good Art and coming into it as a, you know, non kind of, you know, founder member and a kind of contributor was the idea of not being alone in the feelings of isolation and problems about being a mother and an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And the necessity to positively kind of identify with that, to not feel that these are issues to be solved and, you know, to present a kind of, you know, perfect front of functioning kind of motherhood and practice and everything. And I think, you know, through the kind of talks we've had and the shows that we've done, I've come to realise this kind of impossible kind of burden that mothers and parents are absorbing about questions of inequality that have been moved to questions about taste or morality, even more worryingly. And so actually I think, you know, my kind of really big concern that I kind of take from this and that I feel about this kind of email as well is that structural inequalities are being presented as emotional inequalities, and the tone of this email and the kind of thoughtless response to it sounds to me like, you know, go away and do a women's show then, you know, as though these
about vaginas kind of, and boobs,
yeah,
and
like we have some kind of, you know, essentialist kind of project to achieve and we're not 50% of the, you know, or more of the practicing kind of art world. So I'm always quite torn about this issue about whether to positively discriminate and have and make sure there's 50% of artists in shows, or whether to do it in a more inherent and intuitive way, which I suppose in terms of my curatorial practice I've tried to do. I have actively sought out female artists and, you know, trawled around kind of graduate shows and the like and kind of nurtured kind of female artists into a position of showing sometimes where historically I would always be approached by men, you know, with their proposals and with their kind of ideas, and I would always have to go and kind of on the whole seek out women to kind of enter into kind of group shows and shows. When I was curating there was a less of a kind of visibility, so I think there's a huge amount of, you know, work to be done kind of across the board of education and in terms of, you know, direct action, like the kind of action you're taking with Enemies to promote and make visible women's practice, and in not in necessarily kind of, you know, flashy and kind of provocative ways.
Mm.
So
you do positively discriminate in your curatorial
capacity.
Yes, but not in the way that this curator is implying to go off and do, you know.
No.
Your positive
discrimination comes in the form of you make the effort to seek out the
I have done,
missing
yeah.
members of the arts, you know, art
yeah,
world
but this
who
is,
are
yeah.
women. In
yeah, and this has been over a period of kind of 20 years. And when I started out, I was one of the first shows that I was involved in was a bad girl show at the ICA, which is about kind of like I guess second wave, you know, feminism. And we did a kind of riot girl day, which was, you know, like video diaries and, you know, posters and all this kind of quite old-fashioned idea of positive discrimination and positive identifications around difference. So it's quite, yeah, it's an old-fashioned idea, and I don't, you know, think that necessarily it's a redundant idea.
What, positive discrimination is a old-fashioned idea?
It sounds like that, yeah. And it has been presented to me that work is done. In conversation with another, I do have to say, male curator, when I said I was curating a show where the artists were all women, or this was something I was proposing, he said, "Don't you think that's really kind of a bit passé?" And it's been, you know, we're kind of over that, you know.
But what is that? What is that voice that's speaking? I mean, it doesn't. It's irrelevant who the individual was that said that. But I mean, the actual tone of voice is something that's assuming that there's trends that aren't actual active progressions, you know, in the whole development of art practice, which is excluding anything that's not sort of already. dominantly present in art practice already. Because what's so important about positive discrimination in any area is that it allows new generations to witness more possibilities mm-hmm. that aren't represented normally in the main sort of mainstream of whatever it is, whether it's art or whether it's, I don't know, social work or whatever, or teaching or whatever. I mean, positive discrimination is so vital to the younger generations to actually see who's allowed to be in a certain area of work.
I mean, I think one of the things Esther's saying is the way in which she's practicing as a curator is not by necessarily actively positively discriminating, but by seeking out
it is
women.
That is active.
But it's within.
I really respect it.
I don't know. That
I think it's such valuable work.
I suppose it is active.
I'm trying not to engage with that patronising language that we just kind of heard.
But it's within the practice, rather than it's kind of embedded within your approach to be seeking out women artists in a different way from responding. Rather than just responding to the male artists who approach you with their work, that's you say you're seeking out the female artists. And yeah, I think it's within your practice to be doing that.
And it's, you know, it's called different things at different times, isn't it? And at different periods of time and change, there's more of a need to politically draw attention to things. And I would say now, in a climate of, you know, quite extreme kind of conservatism and kind of reactive moral panics and around kind of many issues towards difference or many of the issues that women and mothers will engage in, I think there is a need for positive discrimination, whatever we call it.
I think there's a great need for help as well for mothers. I mean, I know that there are some dads and who also are involved in childcare, and especially for many artists who might have an artist as a partner, where the division of labour is split. But that's by no means the norm, and I think somehow there has to be more help. I mean, we get to a point where we talk about that idea of the genius undisturbed.
Yeah, I mean, I think more often than not, opportunities for artists are geared towards single artists without children or family or caring responsibilities. And, you know, those could be mothers or fathers. And this basically perpetuates the myth of the artist as the kind of lone genius. I think in the art establishment, whether we're talking about, one of the shows that I did in this series was talking about the possibility of taking children to residency opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I think so that's a particular area that I'm interested in and have come up against difficulties with, that it's incredibly difficult to find opportunities that are family friendly and that accept families. So it's not the particular kind of part of the art establishment that I suppose I'm talking about at this point is it's geared to supporting artists who don't have those kind of who don't have children.
Well, it's easier for them.
Exactly. It costs less money. It's more straightforward to have.
There's already structure there that.
Exactly. So the whole system is kind of geared towards that. And I think that this leads to a systemic discrimination towards families, which in effect is more likely to discriminate against women because women are more likely to be taking on more of the caring roles. And I say that it's discrimination against families because, you know, a male artist might hesitate to disappear to another country for 3 months, leaving his partner and child behind. But it's probably more likely, it's probably even less likely that a woman artist is going to ditch small child and leave for 3 months. Mm-hmm. So if there's not the possibilities for... I mean, there are occasionally exceptions to that rule, but it does feel like that's the norm and that's the expectation.
And it's definitely discriminatory against families because it's discriminating against kids as well. Because if the artist's parent doesn't practice, the artist's parent starts to go mad.
Yeah.
And that's not good for the children.
No, that is not good. Yes. But then how does the artist's parent continue to practice when, and I want to bring you in on this, Kat, when the government are systematically, you know, dismantling or trying to dismantle the welfare state. And tax credits in particular is something that has helped a lot of artists, either in couples or singly, who work on a freelance basis and are self-employed. And it has helped pay for childcare.
Mm.
That threshold has been dropped. By how much?
Well, I think the plan is to drop it over 3 years. So percentage-wise, how much it's dropped in the first bit that they've had, I don't know, but
I think it's 20%.
Okay, good. Someone knows. But I mean, it's significant. I mean, child tax credit is definitely something that allowed me to continue practicing, and my partner. We're both creatives and both freelance, and we both share the childcare, I would say, you know, since I stopped breastfeeding, absolutely equally. But yeah, without child tax credits that allowed us to use nursery, you know, before the three-year-old free state nursery, well, yeah, I mean, I think probably I would have had to have stopped practicing for the first 3 years, which would have, it would have just been catastrophic to me as a, you know, functioning, sane person. And where are we going with this?
Well, but then I think the thing is, even once the children start at school, then the issue that you have to confront is the summer holidays, and trying to balance having your practice and earning money and dividing the childcare and spending any time with your children.
Has there ever been a time that society's valued art practice enough that artists actually receive genuine support? I mean,
no, but Anna does tell us that from Berlin, and we can ask her about this after 7 o'clock, but that childcare is heavily subsidised in Germany, and so the possibilities for work and being able to work are greater. Mm. Artists don't have it. You know, there are lots of myths about Berlin and being an artist there in terms of cheap or property and big spaces, which is no longer the case.
Yeah, no longer the case. I mean, myth, I think, is a slightly strong term, because I think it was the case.
It was the case, but apparently she says, from what she's finding out, it's not the case.
But
now.
I mean,
but
listen,
she also
says this has always been the case for artists. I mean, we have to migrate, you know.
Absolutely.
In a cycle, you know, a place gets very popular and trendy, and then it gentrifies, and then all the artists have to move off and find somewhere new to populate and
but
commune.
The state supports childcare in Germany in the way that it doesn't here.
Well, I don't know how they support it there, but my experience here up until, when was that, mid last year, was that I did receive free childcare. I'm not trying to go against the arguments that are brewing here.
No. And actually, I want to react to that, because I quite like the idea of spilling a load of personal crap, if anybody's willing to listen to it, because I found my situation particularly difficult, which is why I came on air for over a year and just ranted and raved about my difficulties. And I was with a partner. We have subsequently split up, but and if anybody's listened to the broadcasts over the year, they'd know. But you'd have to listen in detail, which I don't expect anyone to do, and I'm ranting now. But when we were together, he was employed full time and on a fixed income, and I, self-employed, was earning very little. But because he was on a fixed income, we couldn't get any of the tax benefits that child tax credits or tax credits. So childcare we couldn't afford, because I couldn't get any help with childcare. And I couldn't afford the childcare because I wasn't working, and I couldn't find the work because I had the child. Mm. And so since we have split up last August, financially I'm better off as a single parent. Although I am living at the mercy of friends, because I am now lodging with friends, but until I figure out how to take the next steps. But I cannot be the only single woman in London in this position, where trying to find housing is an issue, and how do I find housing? But also, how can this system be sane in any way, where financially I can get childcare paid for now that I'm on my own, when I couldn't when I was with her dad? So in one respect, you know, we have the conservatives, you know, and governments talk about, you know, supporting the family and marriage and the nuclear family and all this sort of nonsense. And then on the other hand, I didn't, you know, in no way did it support me in terms of my attempt to try and stay together with this.
No, I mean,
situation.
I think there's a really fundamental issue at stake is, and we all bumped into it since we've had...
our children.
Our children. Well, I'm just wondering if it's got anything to do with being an artist or not. I'm not sure that it is. But, I mean, I think a fundamental issue is that as women now in the 21st... Are we still in the 21st or are we 22nd century?
It's the 21st.
21st century women, we're all educated to the... Everything's equal in terms of our starting point, you know, alongside men. Mm. But there's fundamental structural things in society that haven't addressed what the reality is being equal, mm-hmm. you know, an egalitarian society we have not reached.
No.
Okay, and so maybe we're, as women, we're still at the forefront of that battle, you know, to achieve something close to an egalitarian society, because the issues of childcare versus work, career, art practice, I mean, it's kind of like impossible to resolve within the existing structures.
It's mm-hmm. totally
and
impossible.
And going back to what you were saying about
so many different
artist
directions.
Residencies not accepting yeah. children and stuff. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, but there's something that I definitely think there's a problem with the kind of like set parameters of art practice, and that maybe is this crazy statement, like set parameters of art practice, like as if there are any set parameters of art practice, but there are. They might be hard to like define down into just painting or photography or whatever, but I mean one of the fundamental problems I think is solitary practice, because the only things that have allowed me to continue practice and are my collaboration with my partner in being a family.
Right.
My collaboration with my collaborator in making my art practice. And it seems like, in a really general sense at the moment, the people that are sort of running wild and doing progressive things and actually making things move at the moment are all people who are involved in groups, you know. The people that are really struggling and getting really scared at the moment are people who are in these isolated nuclear family situations, you know, who are losing their jobs, struggling to pay the mortgage, having their benefits cut. But anyone who's in some sort of collaborative, communal, you know, group thing seems to be, I don't know, on a tidal wave of sort of activity. So I suppose what I'm saying is I think this, and also going back to the email thing from that curator and the idea of, what's it called? What did we say, this thing? Positive discrimination and stuff. I mean, what's so important about it is that there's new ways out there, there's new practices out there, but the people that are doing them don't even know what they are, you know? They don't even know what it is that they're doing, but they're doing something new. And there needs to be spaces that allow to just look at that, even if they're going to be failures for endlessly for the next couple of decades.
But
you know?
What's dangerous about that particular email and what it was most offensive is the fact that if this curator had actually done his research, he would have found out that there are more women coming out of art school than men. It cannot be that only men are making great art.
Well, of course it's not.
So it's a load of crap.
But it was a very bad... I mean, that's a crazy email.
It's a crazy email, but nevertheless, it exists in writing. Somebody thought this and decided to put it to, you know...
Yeah, but it didn't
But if you know, if one person can think this way, how lazy can then the art world be in terms of supporting women?
And how lazy can the state be in terms of thinking of ways forward and supporting... not just women, but society, because, I mean, this is not just a problem for women, this is a problem for families, like Jemima said, you know. I mean, it's not just women that are suffering under this, it's men as well. You know, it's families that are breaking apart, kids are losing out, definitely due to very lazy governance of states.
Yes, but to sort of, you know, pick your battle... In terms of talking about the experience of artists, I've been completely surprised by the reactions that we've had by by announcing, by being willing to discuss about my own situation, which led on to meeting other women who are also feeling isolated, lost confidence, not knowing how they're going to get back to work and when. I had a colleague of mine, I do a little bit of teaching in a school in town, and he said to me that it's a given that when you have children, it just stops for a while. And I thought, I bet it didn't stop for you. Maybe it stopped for your wife, but and it clearly hadn't stopped for him, but I didn't feel like punching anyone, metaphorically speaking, of course, that day. But Esther, you've talked quite a bit, and both of your shows were on the idea of, well, around the idea of emotional capital. Mm. And a value system that is not in place to support the effort that we put into child rearing. If I can summarize both your very complicated and sophisticated arguments, but somehow we always come back to women when we talk about these issues in terms of child rearing, in terms of the responsibility of the burden, I keep calling it the burden of childcare.
Well, it is an impossible burden that I say parents, because I do think it's an issue that affects I think affect men and women and their relationships and the possibility of sustaining a relationship as well, because of the inequality that enters when a woman effectively might give up her practice or her work. And I'm very struck by thinking about that, artists quite often don't achieve recognition and success until a kind of mid-career point or mid-life, and this will also be the point at which artists may have put off, having children. Women have, a very different experience of the duration of being an artist, achieving success and returning and sustaining a career in there as an artist. I suppose the shows that I did were really concerned with I came across this kind of term, emotional capital, because I was trying to think of a way. I mistakenly thought this term might be a way of understanding that the work that women did, the work of care, the work of love, it might be a way that this work was valued. Actually, I found out that it's a kind of quite problematic term, because it's another way of trying to kind of capitalize upon emotions as a kind of resource. And in the conversations I had with the academics involved, they presented the idea that actually the idea of emotional capital was a way of presenting structural inequalities as emotional and personal kind of problems. I don't know that it particularly was, arrived at a solution, but I think it is very important to keep problematizing and being very verbal about these issues, and that they are complex, and because they're complex doesn't make them not worth kind of staying with and sustaining. The issues of feminism themselves have been hugely complex and culturally embedded over a huge period of time, and that's something I'm been really keen to in my practice and my kind of consciousness as a female curator and as a mother to think about. But yeah, there is an impossible burden that parents are placed in with the necessity of parenting and practicing, and it's compounded by a very kind of hostile and difficult economic climate at the moment. And for that reason, I think there's more reason than ever to make campaigns and voices very political.
Which is where we think we're going to go with Enemies of Good Art to hit the ground running, so to speak, and take on certain campaigns. We're joined on the line by Anna Shorter.
Hiya.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Anna.
Hello. And speaking of just listening to Esther, we've been trying to get the lowdown about, we've talked a little bit about Berlin and childcare, and while we don't, not putting you on the spot in terms of being an expert on the subject, you have had certain things to overcome in terms of
experience of the childcare system over in Berlin, in Germany. I'd love to return to what Esther was talking about with her ideas around emotional capital. But yeah. I mean, on the subject of childcare in Germany, it was quite interesting to move here. There's a difference between Berlin and the formerly eastern regions, the regions that were part of the DDR, the communist part of the divided Germany, and the West and West Germany. In the formerly communist regions and places like Berlin, there's really generous support for childcare in the early years, in particular, below three. Whereas in Western Germany, the support, you can start getting support from the state, and I talk about monetary support. So childcare places are subsidised. In the formerly Western parts of Germany, from the age of three, and it starts earlier, a lot earlier, in the formerly Eastern parts, because they had a view under the communist system there that mothers would be working, and their children would go into to nurseries, but it's something that is. Once you actually manage to find yourself a place in a nursery in Berlin, it's quite an astonishing kind of system. Most of the artists that I've spoken to, they all use nurseries and are able to put their children get childcare for their children to continue their practice. Early on in their babies' lives, and it's I think what it does is it takes away the massive difference in opportunities you have for possibly being able to work and being able to afford to work when you're income isn't very high, or you can't suddenly get a new job and get a big pay rise that you'd need to do, say in London, to be able to afford or to be able to do in England, when to be able to afford to say pay for nursery for two children in their early years, or even pay for nursery for one child in their early years. I mean, that's the sort of way that Berlin. That it operates in Berlin.
And we did have a really good system here, and that was being built up of Sure Start as well, the kind of more Brown than Blair, but under the last Labour administration, which actually was planned to be rolling out free childcare for all two-year-olds. And that's obviously been scrapped kind of now, along with the scrapping of whole-day childcare from free upwards to now half-a-day childcare.
Oh, wow.
And there's a kind of sorts of kind of changes and cuts coming in with this universal credit that's coming in 2013, that's kind of limiting the amount of combined benefits any family or individual can receive. So therefore, if you have high housing costs, your housing benefit or contribution towards mortgage, you know, will take up the most entirety of this budget. And I think childcare will be included in that. Yeah. So it's frustratingly, it's not as though there was actually a decent system, although it was kind of rolling out in different places across the country and was, you know, predominantly successful and well used in inner cities. It was a national national system, and it's really gutting to see that go, and without I would have been in a different
point
situation.
About the, say the difference between I'm not an expert, but this is just what I've gleaned from my time here. The difference between the UK and Germany is that Germany's got the German government's brought in quite a lot of measures to do something about the very, very low birth rate in Germany. It's got one of the lowest birth rates in Europe, they do all sorts of things like have tax breaks for married couples with children. they have higher child benefit payments that rise with every subsequent child. I don't know how it works in practice, but on paper, on contracts, they seem to have some very, very progressive maternity and paternity employment laws. One example is, say, paternity leave. Your husband can take up to 6 months. I think it's 6 months paternity leave, and this sort of time that women have, at least in the UK, to spend with their children after they have a baby, is can be shared between partners.
Anna,
sure.
So would that be? You take it in turns.
Yes, I think so.
That's the same in Denmark as well.
In Sweden. I'm sorry?
Yeah.
And in Sweden, it's a similar system.
Which
paternity
is a much closer thing to equality than
Anna,
support for it.
If you're finding, it seems to me that if we're speaking about artists, and we are, they somehow the state is more supportive in terms of its childcare provision.
Yes.
So if that's the case, do you find in any way, because you have met a lot of the frustrated from the sheer amount from all the public meetings that we have held together, you and I.
Yes.
And we've met an awful lot of frustrated artists, unhappy women who are not getting back to their practice.
Yeah.
And Jemima sounds like one of those at the beginning of the show today, because she's not getting enough studio time. Angry art mums is what Jemima calls us.
Yeah.
And I put myself in that pot also. But do you find that there's the level of frustration and anger?
No. I have to say, it's not as forward as it is in in London, that kind of surprised me. There seem to be other frustrations that are going on. I mean, I don't want to say that the artist that it's easy to raise a child and be an artist in Berlin, because from the people that I've the artists that I've been speaking to, it's not. There brings a whole other sort of range of problems just by being based or living in Berlin. One of the issues that they are running into is this issue of the sort of rapid gentrification and rises in rent. And so that affects you both on your house and your studio space and your exhibition space and space where art can be either produced, displayed, experimented with, and so on. The price of this space has been rising very, very, very rapidly. Even though it's cheaper than comparative spaces in other cities, say for instance in London, the difference here is that wages are lower. Opportunities for making money out of your work, getting paid for things, are lower. Not as many artists do teaching jobs, just because there don't seem to be that as many teaching jobs as used to be around, say in the UK, where, as I understood from some of the discussions, that many artists would also have some sort of teaching role as well to complement their practice.
There are fewer and fewer teaching jobs available in the UK though now.
Yeah.
That's dwindling. Those opportunities are dwindling for artists.
That's it exactly. there were never that many here in Berlin, from what I can understand. Just going back to the issue of the costs of space, when that's happening, and you're not getting a sort of big rise in, you know, the money that you take home, the situation for many artists in Berlin is that they move here and are based here, and most of their work is shown, bought, exhibited and talked about. It's outside Berlin, and that's a really important lifeline for helping artists make ends meet, to actually have this um, have their sort of their artists, their residencies and work and their relationships with galleries being with organisations and institutions outside Berlin and often outside Germany. It's quite funny. Often I get sort of notifications of people's latest exhibition, and they're never in Berlin. And I just think, oh, shame. I'd love to come and see this, but I'm not going to be maybe in Helsinki, or I'm not going to be in France, or I'm not going to be in Switzerland.
But do you find that women
this constant travelling, mm-hmm. I think, brings its own stress and strain for your family unit, especially when both partners are artists, and they share the childcare and need to look after their children, because their children, up to a certain age, they can come with you. But beyond that, you know, they're in school, they've got their own lives that are rooted
and
quite tightly to a location.
Anna,
city.
We know that more women go to art school in the UK than men do. More women graduate from art school. Fewer women end up on the books of the private galleries in London.
Mm-hmm.
and get the big shows.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel from your research so far, do you know if women feel discriminated against in the way that women artists do in London?
I'm not sure about that, I have to say.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. They didn't this issue of generally women feeling like they weren't given the same opportunities as their male counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
This was mentioned by some of the I can only think of one person who mentioned that, and that was still within the context of becoming a mother and the issues of having a child sort of taking you out of a certain amount of networking that artists in Berlin and of course artists in London have to do just to be known, to get contacts, to hear about things happening, to be able to generate projects.
As a woman, I'm not sure that I feel that men have had more. I'm not as clear as that. That I feel like I've got less opportunities than men, but I definitely have a less sense of myself. You know, as an agent, having agency of my own, and mm-hmm. I put that down to a lack of role models, a lack of platforms that actually fit my gender. You know. But I find it hard to think of actual specific opportunities that I can pinpoint, you know, that's only available to a man.
It's not so much that it's only available to a man, but, you know, more men have won the bigger art prizes than women by a great
amount. Yeah, but that goes back to that email, that bloke saying, oh, but
absolutely.
The great art is only being done by men.
Perpetuating the
of course, of course,
and
of course.
It just keeps on and on doing it.
But that's to do with, like, a sense of being, you know, a sense of your own place that you're justified to be. I mean, it took me a huge amount, far too late did I come to a point where I felt justified to actually call myself an artist, even though I've been practicing and making stuff for a long time. It took so long before I got to that point, and it took a lot of support, you know, from people that I was lucky enough to have met, you know, and I would say, you know, real active work on their part to try and boost my confidence to actually acknowledge that, yes, you know, I'm justified to make stuff and put it out there, not just make stuff and keep it under my bed.
And continue to do that when you're a mother. Yes, Anna?
No, I was going to say that's a really interesting point, Kat, it's this kind of confidence that you do what you're doing and you can give yourself like a label or an identity. I have to say for me, last year I was doing predominantly most of the childcare because I wasn't working, and that really raised lots of questions for me as a as a broadcast journalist and and whatever else I used to do in my life when I did work, because it made me feel like if I'm not doing this role all the time, every day, can I call myself, give myself this label or keep this identity? I'm not working as this day in, day out, 8 hours a day. It was a very, it's quite a sort of strange feeling.
Did you come to the conclusion that yes, you can?
Well, I guess I am.
Good.
Yeah, I think I must.
Yeah.
Because this is just a sort of temporary period. This is a short period in my life when I have to do a lot of childcare. I can't really work at the moment because I'm now sort of 6 months pregnant, there are quite a few things about I guess being a mum with one kid and another one on the way that make me that quite kind of make me self-select out of even say jobs or work or taking on certain projects.
Yeah,
and I guess that's not something that tends to affect men. But it's not like I am.
Maybe it's not going to be just a short period of your life, though.
Maybe it's forever.
Once you have children. I mean, maybe the thing of doing part time or not 8 hours a day solid on one thing doesn't mean that you can't still be justified in giving yourself that same title. I mean, maybe this is a new pattern of work that should start to predominate in the workplace, not just for women but for men as well. You know, maybe this idea of doing 8 hours solid on one thing is a defunct, now no longer useful idea now that women are emancipated and
for me as an artist, I feel like it's about finding those little windows of time that I can be focused on the work, and it's just having enough momentum to be doing enough over the course of
so a you're working enough. Mornings in the studio and afternoons in your employment, that would suit you.
If I could just find some kind of pattern of work where the balance was right, that I, even though I would be pulled in too many directions, it's just finding enough of a balance to be in the studio, enough to have enough momentum.
And would you say that the predominant obstruction to that at the moment is your employer being unflexible?
It's financial, yeah. The problem is it becomes impossible to justify the studio time because it's...
Because I was lucky enough to chat to you before we went on air, but you said that your employer was being quite inflexible with, your working hours there, that there was a possibility that if they were more flexible, you'd be able to find a better balance for practice as well.
I think that's the thing that's difficult, because I'm stretched in many directions. Mm. So yeah, I'm not. I mean, I think that the in terms of keeping one's identity as an artist, it does feel really important to do that. In order to be the mother that I want to be, I need to still be the person that feel that I
and
am.
In order to be able to do that and to be able to practice as you did beforehand, if we go back to the idea of support for artists and women, I'd like to read the agenda that we have for our first public meeting in a year, which is going to take place on the 9th of March at 2:30 at the South Bank Centre. As part of the Women of the World Festival. And we've already discussed the first half of this agenda that I wrote with Jennifer Thatcher, who chaired our first public meeting at the Whitechapel Gallery in the summer of 2009. And also she chaired our first radio discussion, and hopefully Jen will be able to join us on the day. And she's expecting her first baby pretty soon. But however, we wrote this agenda together, and we ask our great art, based on this email that we've just talked about earlier, and art by women mutually exclusive. Should individual curators, dealers, editors, etc. be responsible for a more equal representation of women artists, in brackets of whom there are now more graduates than male? close brackets. How can we encourage art producers, promoters to take equality seriously without accusation of positive discrimination? We have looked at this already, but I would like us to sort of like, if we could comment on the following. No more family rooms, please. Why are there no creche facilities in major public arts institutions? Why are we not welcome at public lectures and other events with our babies and our small children? And if we're not welcome, we certainly don't feel it. I know, Kat, you've been brave enough to take Robin to many of these, but I know an awful lot of women who don't and won't, because of the fear of being asked to leave, and women who have been asked to leave.
No, but my issue is having to stay quiet in an art gallery. But and I know that I go up against everyone on that one.
No, but let me finish. Let me finish the last point.
I'm just more of an anarchist than the rest of you.
Let me finish the last point. How do we lobby for more adult-centred art events that our children are welcome to attend, as opposed to more family carts where we can all turn up and play with little Johnny and a piece of paper? We've done a show called The Great Divide, where the divide between those who do and don't have children is massive, and we know this. But how do we, in some way, if we felt more supported in terms of the more public element of our practice, I crave to go to the Tate and put Cecily in a creche where she can play in something and enjoy it and have fun running around and go and study a show. I don't mind, and I know Kat... scrunching her nose at me. It's not the idea that I mind children being in the gallery, but I cannot concentrate on a show that I've paid a lot of money to go and see when she's
show's
running.
Being unrealistic, you know. I mean, it's not in touch with the world. It's not in touch with the street, which is, you know.
But the reason we've got all these family carts is because of the nature of public funding, and that galleries started to be galleries and museums and institutions are now funded primarily through lottery funding and sponsorship. And there is when I was working as for a small time as a director of an arts organisation, I actually had to make a service level agreement with a local council in order to get the money that I'd get for my programme for the next year. And in order to do that, I had to service different parts of the community. And a huge part of it is education and family-centred activities. This isn't about women having their time to educate themselves.
The arts establishment is about
the political agenda of where the funding, what the funding pot is called and how you fulfil it. And the cheapest way to do that is have someone you call an arts educator and a trolley with some felt tips on it, stuff that goes along with that.
I think the art establishment's take on family is that it's tick the family box by, as you say, doing that, not actually look at what artists might be doing in relation to family. That's just, I think institutions have a blind spot about artists with family. Their take on family is, like you say, the cart with the felt tips.
Yeah, children are more visible than women in art galleries.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Look, why do you have to distract your child? You know, why do they have to be doing something separate from what you're doing? This is what I'm arguing
because
for.
Because then they seem to be doing the activity.
Yeah, no, but at what point? But the activity is going to the art gallery, being in that space with the artwork. I mean, there's absolutely nothing to say that a child can't get a lot out of that. Yes, it's on a completely different level from us, but why do you have to exclude them from that? Why do you have to put them in a place, in another spot in the building that's called a creche? Why can't they come with you through the gallery? At what point was it decided that art galleries must be absolute hush? Because I'm sorry, I just don't believe it's been like that through
but
time
for
immemorial.
Me, it's not about the hush.
At some point,
but
public galleries used to be full of noise
but it's
and
not
buzz
about
and
the
bustle.
Hush. It's not about the hush. It's about being able to concentrate on something that the Frances Elise show, that, you know, it's a lot of video work when it opened. I loved that show.
That show was perfect for
kids. It was
kids.
Great, but it was perfect for your kid who would watch it with you.
No,
my
no.
kid wanted to jump all over every screen she could get her hands near, and I couldn't concentrate the work, and a lot of those works were quite long, and I wanted the headspace and I wanted the time.
Exactly. I think it's about having
it's
the choice.
It's not just about the kids, it's about us, you know?
It's about having the
what
choice.
No.
I want to do both.
You should be able to go to a gallery with your kid, and your kid's allowed to function as a child.
Yes.
Some sort of like little robot.
No, and I think that can already happen, but what can't happen is if you want to go without them and you don't have the child,
childcare, you can't just drop them for a little while. And I don't see why both aren't possible.
I think we should be able to do both.
In galleries.
Both what?
Why can't you have a choice of being a mother who wants to go around the gallery on her own and have clear boundaries about the fact that this isn't her activity? And why can't you decide if you want to take your child on a, you know, child-led activity or your activities with them and other parents, you can do that. I think it's an ideological, historical divide about the idea of what
I talked about.
We're picking kind of.
No, it's the same as being in the street. You know, I mean, some people are comfortable to do everything in the street. Some people are like really neurotic about being.
I like to take my child around a gallery and for us to look together at the work, and I value that enormously.
If there were loads of other kids in the gallery, the kids would be getting on fine by themselves. Okay, you've got your creche right there on the floor in front of you.
Oh, but there are. I mean, it's buggy park every time you go into the Tate. I mean, there are a lot of people with kids in the Tate. There are. Tate Modern, It's not like you never see them down there. Of course, there are huge amounts of families at the Tate, and a lot of kids of all ages.
The thing is, I don't think he's arguing about different ways that we want to occupy galleries, but about being taken seriously in our desires to be female artists, female curators, academics, and having the space and the seriousness to do that, whether it's in our work, whether it's in receiving childcare, whether it's in the way that we practice or the way that we even talk to each other. And my concern hearing this kind of discussion and rapidly becoming kind of argument is about ideological structures around, or not structures, but ideas that we have about, you know, what it is, you know, to be an artist, to occupy some clean, rational kind of working space. You know, motherhood is messy, being a woman is difficult, and taking on, you know, these issues and, you know, accommodating them as realities rather than as, you know, positive discriminations or special needs, you know, or, you know, special children's activities is what's really important. So, yeah. You know, we are reproducing tomorrow's generation of, you know, what labour force as well as artists.
And the art establishment does not acknowledge that.
No, but the culture of work, you know, doesn't
more
as well.
More generally,
and
yes,
the culture
exactly.
of education. I mean, we did. I had Mo Fropp on the first show that I did, and she was talking about the Feminisms and Subjectivities group that she has at Chelsea, which I was really impressed by. And I really do think and hope that younger female artists and academics coming through the system will have a different experience, and that
to have,
you know,
at least
our,
some kind of take on it rather than just being in denial
being
about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I felt
it's a historical project we're involved in.
As an art student, you know, all those years ago, I was just in denial about the possibility that I would ever have children, and it was only later that
I agreed to it
in the abstract.
Which is a classic male thing to do, yeah.
Yeah. Put it off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, men don't want to think about having kids because it's going to really seriously bugger up their chances for whatever it is they're planning to do.
But we have increasingly followed the male model on everything, haven't we?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the only model that's out there,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the one that's bleated at us all the time.
Yes, so
Anna's trying to get in from...
I forgot Anna was there.
I was just going to say, it's an interesting kind of... expectation that you're describing, this kind of feeling when you leave university and you're 20 something and you just think children are going to be one massive barrier. They're not something to embrace. They're just going to be barrier after barrier to me achieving.
We have
creches in galleries would help.
Yeah,
creches in galleries would help. But also, you know, when our babies are tiny and they're breastfeeding, and a lot of women are breastfeeding now, you can go and sit to any daytime talk, and it's quite easy in the first few months of life. Why are women not encouraged to do that? Mm. Why are breastfeeding mothers not encouraged to come to all the ICA, all the Courtauld Institute,
actively encouraged
to come out and not feel isolated? We've got about 1.5 minutes left, so I just want to round up pretty quickly. And I know that Kat and her collaborator have a show coming up at Hales Gallery in April.
Yeah. 18th of April to 31st of May at Hales Gallery, which is in the T Building, Bethnal Green. And 19th of April to the 6th of June, we've got Iraq, How, Where, For Whom, which is a exhibition in collaboration with Hannah Malala, an Iraqi artist, which is at the Mosaic Rooms at the Catan Foundation in Earls Court.
And Jemima is working with the London Olympics.
I'm doing a project for the Cultural Olympiad in August called Bus Tops.
And Esther's about to finish her PhD.
I'm completing a project called Ugly Beast, a critical study of curating contemporary fine art.
Anna's about to have another baby.
Yay!
Yay!
It's still a couple of months away.
And I'm about to host another series of public discussions under the title Enemies of Good Art. So I do hope you'll join us. It's been a fascinating journey on the radio. And big thank you to Resonance, and a big thank you to listening.